Namaste. Good morning. This satsang is not taking place from my residence. So in case there is any interruption with the internet, then we should be back very soon, in case it happens. I would like to address two questions that I have received. One, with reference to the current economic situation and the pandemic, which is a very real question in that sense, being faced by many people. So we'll take that up first. A bit of background. In addition to other spiritual traditions, I have been interested in Advaita since 2016, when Nisargadatta's Prior to Consciousness book caught my eye in a bookshop. Independence and freedom, especially the freedom to move, have personally always been very important. And in the past, I have lived accordingly. However, after an unwise investment a few months before the pandemic, I lost everything. At 45, I have found myself penniless and back at my mother's place in a big city in Italy, which I never really liked and has at the moment the strictest COVID restrictions in the country. I have just found employment till the end of this year in the warehouse of an American corporation, which involves a daily commute of 4 hours. In this company, the COVID restrictions are even tighter, making it an impersonal work environment. Although without spiritual practice, I would have been worse off. Nevertheless, at times, regret for the past, frustration for the present, anxiety and concern about the future, related to the very narrow lane I find myself in now, are overwhelming, making it difficult to stay present. I would be very grateful if you could give some clarity to two questions. One, how to deal with negative feelings that may arise from a challenging situation like the one I have described. Two, it is often spoken about awareness at work, which may be okay if one is a painter, a weaver, a carpenter, or something along those lines. How does that work when one is doing menial, dull, repetitive job, where at the same time you have to rush, such as preparing orders in a warehouse or working on an assembly line? Let's explore this with the light of understanding. We had a lift man in our building. Those in India are familiar with this concept when the job of the lift man is to only open and close the gates of the lift, the elevator, the old-fashioned elevators, not the automatic ones. He came from the village in Uttar Pradesh, and he was so happy to be given this job to be a lift man. He was young. He would open the gate, take you in with a smile and a namaste or salam, close the gate. And that's all he did. That was his job, being a lift man. He loved his job because he came without any conditioning from the village, from a life of hardship. He took the plunge to come to the big city, find whatever job he could find. This is what he found. No prior work experience, no expectations. The thrill of doing something new, meeting people he would have never met before in his life, and doing what he could to the best of his ability. No concepts of dullness, of repetition, of something better. Those had not yet entered his consciousness. None of this was his choice. Now, for most of us, this is not the position we find ourselves in, because our life's experiences have given us the dubious gift of conditioning, where we start comparing and judging. This was better. I was happier doing something else. This is frustrating. This is a menial task. This is a dull, repetitive task. I am not enjoying this as I was enjoying the earlier task. There is nothing wrong in this. This teaching will not tell you this is a wrong way of thinking. This teaching shows the conditioning that is responsible for these thoughts arising. It is just laying it out for you to look at. I repeat, this is an all-embracing teaching where no experience of life and living can be rejected, because there is a total acceptance of it. So if one is frustrated and anxious, that too is accepted. Frustration is arising, and that is witnessed. It is bound to arise if one has been in a job that has been more comfortable, more interesting perhaps, more fulfilling. And now one finds one has had to take up a job just to survive. What is seen with the light of understanding is this divine play. How one thing leads to another. how situations beyond our control make us behave and react. This is seen in the clear light of awareness and understanding. So this is not a teaching which will say, don't be anxious, be positive, thank God for your blessings, etc., etc., etc. Because it does not reject what is happening now. The problem is, when frustration arises, the ego steps back in and claims the frustration. I am frustrated. Wouldn't frustration be a natural outcome of a situation one does not like? Imagine the pressure I would put upon myself if I said, I must be happy with everything, I must like everything. No. If frustration arises, it arises in the moment and it is witnessed. What perpetuates the frustration is the me which keeps coming back and claiming, I am frustrated, I should not be frustrated, I should be grateful to God, I should this, I should that, and the wheel of karma keeps going on and on and on and on. The thinking mind of the me feeds on the frustration and makes it into a long story of how I am suffering. I should not be suffering. I wish things were better. The me is exposed with the light of understanding. That is all that happens. The mechanics of the me, what all it does to survive, what all its projections are, either into the dead past and therefore regret arises, or into the imaginary future, therefore anxiety arises. All this is seen in a clear light of understanding. And that seeing creates what Maharaj refers to as a wedge between experiencing and being. If someone is earning, let's say, $1,000 a month, and that is now reduced to $500 a month, of course, disappointment will arise. Isn't it human nature? Remembering the better days will arise. Human nature. The wish that I wish things could have been like they were back then will arise. All part of human nature. But what happens is that the me starts playing the role of the victim. This happened to me. Not this happened full stop. This happened to me. Now look at our luxury. We can talk about all this, reflect on it, analyze it. That lift man, had none of that. Can you imagine this kind of thought process where he feels, oh, this is so dull, so repetitive. What can I do so that it's no longer dull and repetitive? Shall I be aware that I am opening and closing the door of the lift and rest in awareness. Do you see? None of that happens for the lift man. It is a simple life. What we do is we set ourselves against a situation. And then we try and use our attitude to rectify what we think is wrong. The intent is noble. Why? Because we are not at peace. But it is this me which is the mischief maker. The me is the mischief maker. Because it is the absence of the me with its sense of doership which is the peace. Now, the troublemakers, are they the anxiety, the frustration and so on? Or is the primary troublemaker the me that is feeling frustrated and anxious? If we pull the me out of the equation and make it exit, everything is gone. The frustration and the anxiety goes along with the me. But can we take the me out like this? Of course we can't. It is the functional element in daily living. But what can be uprooted is the sense of doership in the me. So then when the me is functioning, it is pure functioning in the moment. So even if we say, I am anxious, it is not a doing. Anxiety is arising. Full stop. Then we are not lost in the story of anxiety, which perpetuates itself all the time. We embrace it and accept it for what it is, a movement in consciousness at a particular time, which will last till it is supposed to last. What happens with the understanding is that all this does not get sustenance. These feelings are not being perpetuated. And so they dissipate sooner rather than later. So to address these two questions specifically, how to deal with the negative feelings that may arise from a challenging situation like the one described? Let them be. Let them deal with themselves. It is often spoken about awareness at work, which may be okay if one is a painter, a weaver, a carpenter, or something along those lines. How does that work when one is doing a menial, dull, repetitive job where at the same time you have to rush, such as preparing orders in a warehouse or working on an assembly line? You see, the whole point is when the working mind is engaged, there is no question of being aware at work. The absence of the thinking mind that goes into the past and future. Is the presence of the working mind at work. That is all. The painter is in the moment because the working mind is in the moment always. The thinking mind, which takes one away from the present, is not functioning for the painter at that moment. Similarly, for the lift man, opening the lift gate, closing the lift gate, working mind. I should not be doing this. I am getting bored of this, is the thinking mind. So to be in the working mind mode is to be aware. But the problem is the me wants to be aware that it is aware. That's it. That is why Ramana Maharshi said that when you are doing any work, change the internal dialogue from I am doing the work to the current is doing the work through me. The current of consciousness. This is what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about. Or as Aurobindo said, offer whatever you are doing to the divine. All right, God, this is what is happening. This is what is meant to happen. I offer it to you. If that was so, would any task be a menial task? If one lived this understanding, would any task be a menial task? Would any task be a repetitive task? Does the earth complain that it is repeating its revolutions around the sun all the time? Isn't nature repetitive? Do we not have spring, summer, autumn, winter, spring, summer, autumn, winter, spring, summer, autumn, winter? Who is complaining of repetition? Don't we have high tide, low tide, high tide, low tide, high tide, low tide? Are the waves complaining? Is the ocean complaining? Who is the complainer? Will that complainer stand up and expose itself? So what is seen is it is the nature of the thinking mind, the nature of the me with its sense of doership to complain. I can only complain if I feel I am doing something repeatedly. So the me is exposed. That is what the teaching does. What happens? Witnessing happens more and more. The slipping into the witnessing state happens more and more. That is the gift of this teaching. This fight that one has with oneself all the time through the internal dialogue of the mind reduces. There is a Western philosopher, I forget who said hell is other people. If that is true, then hell is not only other people, but hell is oneself. But Osho was quite right. He said, hell is not being aware. And it is the understanding that brings awareness to all thoughts, feelings, emotions. The light of clarity. There is one more question I would like to address. And then if anyone would like to share something, they are welcome to or to ask any question. It is a one-line question I received. What should one do if somebody insults one's guru? What should one do if somebody insults one's guru? Quite a beautiful question, actually. Now, the answer at the obvious level is do precisely that which you think and feel you should do. What does this mean? Everyone is designed differently, conditioned differently. So if two people hear the same thing, they react in different ways based on their genetics, their nature, their conditioning. So let's say there are two disciples of a guru. Both hear somebody insulting their guru. They may react differently. Now let us not restrict to guru. Let's take someone insults your mentor, someone insults your parent, someone insults a teacher. Let's say someone insults somebody you look up to. It's the same thing. Firstly, whoever is insulting your guru is entitled to his opinion. It is his opinion. He is not proclaiming the truth, even if he feels he is. You see, this is seen that here is an individual who is insulting my teacher. He is entitled to it. It is his view. It is not my view. What have I got to do with it? When one accepts that nobody truly does anything, what happens is that in this case, the insult is seen in an objective light, that through this person, the insult of the teacher is happening. Your guns are no longer trained at an individual. Now, how I react is based on my nature. Now, someone like me, in fact, I have been placed in this situation a couple of times where I had a master I had gone to visit who was criticizing Nisargadatta Maharaj and then Ramesh Balsekar. In fact, it's happened on a couple of occasions with different teachers. Now, my nature is, once I laughed, I mean, because it didn't really matter to me, you see, it went in and came out. That's my nature. My nature is not to argue. My nature is they are entitled to their point of view. It makes no difference to me. But this does not mean that I may keep sitting there listening to the abuse. And if on another instance they insult the guru, my reaction may be different. Whatever arises spontaneously in the moment. So sometimes I find myself just listening and ignoring it. Sometimes I could find myself excusing myself and moving to the back of the room. I don't know. Nobody knows what is going to happen next. Someone who feels upset will react differently. That, look here, you are welcome to your point of view, but let's stop this because I'm not here to receive abuse on my guru. I have not come to see you for that. You see, so there is no how you should be. Everything is appropriate. As long as it is understood that the person in front of you is entitled to their point of view. Neither their point of view nor your point of view is the truth. And when the dialogue and the discussion takes place with that understanding, the reactions are quite different, because it no longer feels like a personal assault on oneself. How dare you tell me something bad about my guru? That does not happen. It is like the famous story of the Buddha, where one man came up to the Buddha and abused him with the foulest of language. And the Buddha remained still. And so one of Buddha's disciples said, "Master, how could you bear this rant, this abusive rant?" And he said, "Where is the question? If someone gives you a gift and you don't accept it, doesn't the gift stay with the giver of the gift?" So the disciple said, "Yes. Similarly, this man has abused me. I have not taken delivery of the abuse, so it will stay with the abuser. What has it got to do with me?" What all are we taking delivery of during the course of the day? All right. Let's see if there are any questions. If not, we can just sit in silence for a bit. Some water. Yes, Vandana.
So, hello, Gautam. I am going to ask you a question. I hope it doesn't annoy you. I've been meaning to ask you for a few Sundays. So, my question is that, you know, many people, your Sunday talks elicit a lot of praise from people. What does it do to your ego as a person? Does it get in? Because praise always, you know, ego loves praise. So, and if not, if nothing happens, how do you as a person control it?
You know, Vandana, I was, I think, gifted with an ego which didn't like praise at all. And didn't, I mean, I was very fortunate that none of this ever got to me, you see. And more so because truly, for me, it is very clearly what I have learned at the feet of my spiritual teacher. So whatever I say, I know is of no credit to me. It is what has been imbibed by the grace of this lineage of masters. And so pleasure most certainly arises that one has been able to impact so many lives. But yet, there's such a knowing that this is just something which one wants to share, because for my own part, my life changed, you see. And so it really does not feel like one is doing something. So the praise which becomes pleasure in the moment, it is always great to receive an email or somebody saying you've touched their lives. That never gets converted to pride.
So how does one control it?
There's no question of controlling it. That control mechanism itself does not exist. If the understanding is total that I didn't do it, then where's the question of controlling anything? It is a default setting, you see. It is a default mechanism that it is not one's doing. You don't have to watch out that it becomes pride. That does not have to happen. That won't happen. Only if you feel you are doing something on your own without the support of the universe and God and consciousness, etc., if the me feels as a separate entity, I am doing it, then it needs to control that pleasure does not turn into pride.
Difficult, no?
control is, after all, the greatest weapon in the hands of the me.
True.
It is all about control. We control our loved ones. We try and control our partners. It's all about control, 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 control. Controlling our emotions, controlling this, controlling that. That is this, this control is such a big word actually, you know. So in fact, this teaching which says nothing is in your control means even if pleasure was to turn to pride, that is seen that this too happens. Why? Because now I have taken it as my doing. And so what was pleasure in the moment has become pride. That is also seen. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing of control is given up. Okay?
Thank you.
Yes, Kumar.
Namaste, Gautam sir. First of all, thank you so much for all your pointers. I had a doubt about a statement a lot of ancient texts make, that humans are somehow the peak of spiritual evolution. Because I was sitting back in nature and I was seeing like my blind dog is happy and wagging its tail and not crying like we humans do. And there was another stray dog who was, you know, tortured and his leg got amputated and he still wags his tail and he's loving to humans. Same with the birds and squirrels. And then we somehow say that we are like the peak of spiritual evolution and they are like the lower species. But I see that they are closer to being and consciousness.
Yes, that is very true. And in fact, we seem most furthest away from being the most evolved species on the planet. But at the same time, we have been gifted with a lot. That is why they say that it is only, even our scriptures say that, it is only in the human birth that enlightenment is possible. You see, there are various reasons here. One is, we have been given the gift of intellect. Though my teacher would say it is the dubious gift of intellect. But we are aware that we are aware. The animal does not have that. You could say the animal is functioning on its animal nature, its innate nature. Automatic, it's on automatic. We human beings are able to separate being from experiencing. No other species has been given this gift. That is why they say man is at the top. Even if you look at it in terms of anatomy, the vertical spine versus the horizontal spine of the animal, the vertical spine for the planes of consciousness, the elevation of the energy, the movement of the energy upwards versus the horizontal spine. So even the human structure is built to reach the highest levels of consciousness, so to speak, samadhi, one could say. So it is actually quite true. And therefore, imagine a satyug where there was enlightened living all around. That would then be called, so to speak, the pinnacle of consciousness being lived. That is possible because the human being living with the realization of the self, the recognition of unity, the understanding that consciousness is all there is, this is possible only for the human being. And as we know, the yugas, the cycles of time, which come and go, this has happened before in the cycle of time. It will happen at some point in the future in the cycle of time. But it is very true because you see, the other aspect is the animal nature. Now, if we get into this subject a bit, the lower three chakras are your animal nature, so to speak, starting from the survival, the Muladhara. So the animal nature comes from the animal consciousness. And where does it change for the human being? From the heart, the Anahat chakra, and then it goes up to the Vishuddhi, to the third eye, and to Sahasrara. So it is an evolution of consciousness in that sense. Consciousness is all there is, but when it comes to individual consciousness, this progression from me and mine, and this limitation which has got superimposed, and this restriction through the spiritual teachings, through the light of understanding, this realization starts dawning. This is the beauty of the human birth. And that is why Ramana Maharshi said that the only purpose of the human birth is to realize. Otherwise, it is a wasted birth. But we know that this will happen only if it is meant to happen. Large parts of the population are poverty stricken. They are only concerned with food, shelter, and clothing. Some of us have the luxury of even thinking along these lines. It is a luxury. You see, as in the Gita it is said, only one in thousands will know me by name, or one in millions, in fact, as Krishna says. So those who are suffering can go on from birth till death without the light of awareness, if that is destined to happen. And for some fortunate few, as Bhagwan says, you are given enough blows in life to start questioning it. What is this about? Why is this happening? Who is feeling all this? The journey turns within. This journey turning within is possible for the human being. Not as the doing of the human being. Consciousness does this turning as a result of placing circumstances and situations before oneself. Sometimes it can be very hard. Sometimes there can be lots and lots of suffering, and people feel, why is life? Is it worth living this life? We have had, since the lockdown, you may be aware of some people who have gone through very rough and tough lives, losing loved ones. And the only reason they have come on to this is because that spark of inquiry has got lit. You know, there's this, there was this poet, Krishna Bihari Noor. For those who know Hindi, I would suggest seeing this short video clip on YouTube of Shujaat Khan. Ustad Shujaat Khan has put in the ghazal form Krishna Bihari Noor's words. Just 7-8 lines. The first line is, Zindagi se badi saza hi nahi. There is no greater punishment than being born. Some people feel that. They've gone through hell. In fact, for my volunteers who are doing the time codes, if you can give a link to this video of Shujaat Khan's, if you just Google Shujaat Khan, Zindagi se badi saza hi nahi, please give a link. And if these 6-7 lines can be translated for our friends who don't know Hindi, they are most beautiful. We can put it in the time code description to give the essence of what they say. This is the reality for many. Especially today, we keep hearing every now and then. Just 2 days ago, we heard a friend lost her brother to the virus. And he had a rough time, apparently, in the hospital. So there's a lot of trauma emerging economically, health-wise. It's a rough ride, you see. I was with a most beautiful man yesterday. Some of you might be aware that I give talks on a channel for Shirdi Sai Baba called Sai Baba's Devotee Speaks. And one of the pillars of that channel is a very simple Maharashtrian lady referred to as I, your mother. And her husband is an astrologer. He's, I think, over 90 years old now. And he mentioned to us yesterday something so true. He said, for the first time in many decades, now human beings are being reminded of death all the time. It's all around. It's close. Isn't that an opportunity? We take so much for granted. Okay. Yes, Smita.
Hi, Gautam. This is my first time. I've been listening to you for a long time, but this is my first time asking you a live question. I'm calling you from London right now. It's about 7 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, my question is that if consciousness is to be aware of all the moments that we experience, and if that is what will set you free, then when that really happens, how will you know that you are free?
It's quite simple. By the degree of peace that you feel. As simple as that.
because you experience so many moments, right, which is not in your control.
Yes.
So many things, just like flipping things on the internet, whatever. And they kind of extract reaction from you.
Yes.
Right. And then you react, and then you kind of don't have moments to pause and reflect. And then when you do reflect, it's, then you kind of sum up the things you like, and then you say, why did I do that? I shouldn't have engaged, or, So it's like a cycle, isn't it? You build your karma like that. And, how can we somehow be more conscious about that and not get, not engage with something,
Yes.
And how to have that moment of reflection and pause.
Yes. You see, we cannot do that. It is the teaching that does that. The understanding that comes through this teaching does that. So what one finds, if this is imbibed as daily living, that one has stepped off the wheel of karma, so to speak, not literally, in the sense that if one is living the understanding of non-doership, one sees that one's reactions to situations in life, people in life, have started changing. One sees that the earlier thought processes, the incessant thinking, is no longer functioning like it used to. Then one knows that the teaching is doing its work. You see, the frustration comes when the me takes ownership of the teaching and tries to apply it to situations in life. That is also a natural process, because that is when the understanding comes in at the intellectual level. And one rationalizes things that, this is the way I used to see the situation. And now this teaching is telling me that, no, that is a misconception. Look at it with this understanding. So that is not to be discounted. what happens is the me thinks it's in control of this process. And so frustration arises because it cannot apply this to each and every event in daily living. That is the me coming in through the back door. All that is seen is, I used to think a certain way earlier. Thanks to this understanding, my thought processes seem to have changed. I view people differently. I view myself differently. I view situations differently. And perhaps I am more, little more maybe, at peace than I was earlier. That recognition itself will do the rest of the work. That is what happens. That is what happens. It is a happening. It's quite beautiful because, you know, you may look back, let's say 1 year ago, at a situation that happened 1 year ago, and you feel now with new conditioning, because of course the teaching is new conditioning, that is either replacing or transforming the earlier condition. And now you feel, my God, if that situation had happened now, I would have been quite different in terms of reaction or how it impacted me and so on. How? The only measure is by the peace, the degree of peace that one is with what has happened.
It's also about habit, isn't it? I mean, you're so habitual to react, to comment and all that, you know. Absolutely. And suddenly it is a fear. Oh my God, now the habit has gone. Now what do I do with this sudden peace I'm experiencing? It's the very fear well as well.
Said. Very well said. Very well
isn't
said.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. Because now I don't know who I am.
Yes.
Earlier.
That's how I think.
Yes, earlier when I reacted, I know who I am. This is me. This is my view. This is my position. So I react. Now that's gone out of the window, or going slowly out of the window.
Yes.
See? Now what do I do?
What do I do now? It's a habit now. It's like, oh my God, now what next? Will I be tested by the universe? Will the universe give me something more challenging? You know, it's, again, the me comes into factor, you know. It is so habitual. Okay, I have dealt with it. It's gone. But now what next? What next? You know? And so yeah. So as you said, it has to just seep down. It's also a different kind of practice. And
yes, because even this is witnessed, you see. This me, which is uncomfortable with being with what is also witnessed. It is so beautiful to see how this thing, which was going in one direction all the time first, now is not doing that. So the me is left guessing, now what? Who am I? If I am not this trajectory of reaction, who am I? You see? So the me wants to try and do something else. So it gets identified with that. Now this is me. So this becomes this whole leela, this play is witnessed and it's new. So one is uncomfortable with this newness. Who is uncomfortable? The witness has no question of discomfort and comfort. It is the me which is uncomfortable. So you are quite right. And I'm so happy you raised this. Because we are so uncomfortable with this new way of being. It is the me that is uncomfortable. It's actually a beautiful step on the journey. Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Are there any more questions? If not, we'll just sit in a couple of minutes. I'll just change the view of the screen so I can see you all.